This is Vectis Radio. For the people, by the people.
Oh, and hello and welcome to this week's edition of Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with my very special guest, Vicky Marie Hogan, transgender woman and volunteer. Welcome, Vicky. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Nice to have you here. Now, you've been out for 4 years.
Yes, sir.
Twice married.
Yep.
And you've got children and family. So, tell us, for you know, people who are perhaps confused between transgender, transsexual, cross-dressing, gay, how do you define transgender? What does it mean for you?
Well, a lot of the popular misconception is that transgender is about sex or your sexual orientation. It's actually, your sex is what your biology says you are, the outward expression, your bodily shape. Gender is determined by your inner sense of being. Your sex could say that you're male, but the gender, your internal identity, is female. And many people live with that a long time. And your sexual orientation has absolutely nothing to do with it. It's just the same as the general public. Your orientation can vary.
So you identify clearly as a woman, and today obviously you dress as a woman, your hair is beautifully done, blonde, you're made up, you've got sunglasses on your head, so you're very much a woman.
I fully identify as a woman now. To be honest, I had trouble remembering what it was like to be as a man. As a woman, it's a completely different world, but I fully identify, and it doesn't even register anymore that I used to be a man. That's gone.
So how old were you? At what point did you realise that actually you wanted to be transgender?
I actually started to understand it about 8 years ago. Up until that point, I've known that I always identified myself as double gendered. I didn't know there's several different names for it, and I didn't even know what the names were, and I still don't know what a lot of them mean. But I identified as double gender. I thought it was when I was 15 years old that I first realised that Vicky existed. But when I came back from Canada recently, I spoke to my sister, who I hadn't seen for 35 years, and I remember that my two sisters used to practice makeup on me and dress up, and the feeling that I used to enjoy it. And I've always liked female sort of pursuits and had a female attitude to things.
That's an interesting comment. How do you define your female attitude, as you put it? What's a female attitude?
I always related better to women than I did men or boys growing up, even in my adult life. I used to enjoy just the feel of feminine fabrics, feminine pursuits. Like I taught myself theatrical makeup when I was a kid. That sort of thing. It was hidden. I didn't understand it at the time, but I remember as well when I was 3 or 4 years old, I was describing to my sister a particular doll she had. I when no one was looking, I used to play with it.
Yeah, and I suppose because what you're describing sounds like the feelings perhaps somebody who enjoys cross-dressing would also enjoy, wearing makeup, putting on feminine clothes and liking the feel of the fabric. And I think I'm sort of becoming quite aware that we are now trying to put people in so many boxes, aren't we? There's transgender, transsexual, cross-dressing, and you clearly want to be defined as a transgender woman. And I suppose it's just finding, you know, does it matter, Vicky? Does it matter how you're categorised to you?
No, not really. To be honest, I don't even like using the term that I'm transgender. I don't believe that I'm trans in anything. I'm actually in the process of transition now. I'm doing hormone therapy. I don't feel like I'm trans in anything. I'm just being what I've always been inside, but been afraid to express or be.
You're just being you.
Yeah, just me.
And will you have the operation or?
Not yet. I've been waiting a year for the referral to the Gender Identity Clinic on the National Health Service. And I've got my first appointment in August of this year. You have to go through psychological assessments first, and surgery is an option in the future.
So I'm very interested more in the emotional side for you, in that you lived a lifetime. You lived a life, didn't you? Like you say, you got married twice, you've had children, yet you weren't almost being true to yourself, it seems. How was that?
to be honest, I was in denial for 40 years. Not one single person, none of my wives, my friends, absolutely not one single person for 40 years knew anything about it. I wouldn't even admit it to myself. I never fully dressed. I never went in public. I never opened the curtains. Never even looked in the mirror for 40 years. I was ashamed of myself. I thought there was something wrong with me. There was no, it wasn't a sexual thrill. It was just part of expressing my own feminine side. And about 8 years ago, I actually started to think about it. And it's a gradual process. A lot of transgender people actually start out by cross-dressing. I used to wear clothes underneath my male clothes. And that's how people started. Some people stay at that point, and other people progress forward to transgender. But transgender differs from cross-dressing, where their actual identity is female, even though their body says male, or the other way around. A female that, whose body says female, but they actually identify as a male.
So, would you say that you would have been happier had you been born a girl?
Very, very much more content. I feel more authentic. And it's a lot of fun. It's a lot easier to feel attractive as a woman than a man.
Okay, so I was just coming on to say, woman to woman, mm-hmm. What do you think is one of the big bonuses of being a girl?
Being able to be more gentle and not live in the masculine world. My background has all been very masculine, but it's nice to be more, being able to express your more feminine side, which is a lot more gentle, a lot more compassionate, and you think about things a lot more, and the hormone therapy actually helps with that.
Okay, so what are the, now I imagine it must be incredibly challenging to be you sometimes. I imagine it must be quite frightening sometimes to be you.
Not for myself in particular. For some reason, I found it particularly easy, but a lot of people, it is very scary. There's a lot of violence, a lot of abuse. I have had abuse. Definitely had abuse. And you lose friends, family, everybody because of it. They don't understand. But for a lot of people, it's absolutely terrifying.
I mean, you have lost your family over this, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
So how, it's a very small question, but it's, I imagine, got a very big answer. How does that make you feel? I can't imagine how you must feel.
It breaks your heart, to be honest. But my way I look at it is that in my lifetime, I've fulfilled everything I need to do as my old self. I've had the career, I've still raised my children, I've stood by my children. And now late in life, I'm now 56. It's time to live authentically and to be content.
And do you think there's any way back for you and your family?
Hopefully. I'm trying to build bridges, and I still try to maintain confidence with them. At the moment, they're not responding very well. I've recently found out that I was a grandmother for the first time, and 2 weeks ago that went as well.
Well, congratulations on that, and I hope that one day you'll get to have a lovely relationship with your grandchild.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah, now that must be incredibly tough.
Yeah.
So if you're, do you think it's fear that makes, and ignorance in the biggest sense of the word, that makes people back away?
A lot of people, like I said, assume it's something to do with sex, that you're perverted. I think it's they don't understand. People just don't understand about it, and I understand that completely. I didn't understand it for 40 years. But it does take a lot of head to get around it. And I talk to people quite a bit, and they have partners, and I always tell them it's not just one person that's transitioning, it's you and the whole family that has to transition. What their expectations were of who you were, and what the hopes of the future were, especially with partners, suddenly don't exist anymore. It has to change.
I imagine it would be like a grieving process, perhaps for family members in some sense, because they've lost the father figure they knew and loved and identified with. And like you say, you just described yourself as a grandmother, so all of a sudden they've got a completely new person in the family in one sense, haven't they?
Yeah, and it's hard for people to understand. I understand that, especially family members and partners. Like I said, it's a lot more difficult for them because they have hopes and aspirations for their future, growing old together. And a lot of people don't survive, but a lot of people do. The couples do stay together.
So it must be completely difficult for everybody concerned, but you're the focal point of it all, really, aren't you? And I think children want, I think we all want our parents to be normal, you know, whatever normal is. So whether perhaps somebody's physically ill or, you know, depressed or, you know, got mental health issues, I think children can sometimes really struggle with that because they just want their mum and dad to be normal. So I suppose coming out as transgender is a huge deal, isn't it? Or can be a huge deal for people.
It's probably the biggest life change that anyone can be part of, not just the person that's going through the transition, but also the family members. There is probably no bigger transition. And like I said, the whole image of who you were changes, especially when it's a secret, and then all of a sudden, they, you know, it takes them a long time to get their heads around it.
Yeah, did you come up against perhaps family members and friends thinking that this was something that you were well aware of, but you had, like that you say, kept it a secret, kept it deliberately from them?
No, they all thought I'd gone bonkers, to be honest.
Right, okay.
Because of my background, it's always been macho occupations, and one of my old army friends actually told me he couldn't imagine a more manly man.
Because you were in the Royal Military Police, yes. You were on active service.
Yeah.
You served in Northern Ireland during the Troubles. So, yeah, you have had a real kind of macho background, as you say.
Yeah.
So you have almost gone, I suppose, in their eyes, from one extreme to another, haven't you?
Yeah. I mean, I was probably trying to hide the fact by doing that sort of thing. Doing the macho occupations was part of trying to be in denial about my true identity.
So when you were involved in active service, were there moments when you, that perhaps the Vicky, the feminine side came through, and so I just can't do whatever it was, where you were finding it even harder because of the fight that was going on within you really?
I always equated by, I've always had a fairly gentle nature. Things that I have been involved in, I can say with confidence that it was never anything that I actually wanted to do. I never set out to hurt anybody, and I had absolutely no other option. Anything that throughout my life, I had absolutely no other option. I couldn't run away. It was what I had to do. It wasn't because I was paid to do it. It's because there was no other option.
I think that's so interesting, and it rings so true, because as I said earlier, it must be very hard being you sometimes. And as you said, you know, you are sometimes victim to abuse. And I know you've used the word freak to me off air, and that's how people often view you. So who would, you know, actively sign up for that unless, like you say, you had no other choice?
Mm. It takes a lot of courage for a lot of people to come out. They live with it for years, and many people suffer from gender dysphoria, which is a hatred of their body. For me personally, I don't feel that way. And it can lead to repeated hospitalisation, suicide attempts, all sorts of addiction issues, all sorts of things. People self-medicate for years and years, and many trans people come out late in life.
And so you've spoken of the rather negative, well, very negative reaction of your family. What about close friends? What about your neighbours now? How do they react to you?
I get on great with all my neighbours. When I came here, I fully understand it's a bit weird, somebody like me moving in. So I put my phone number through the doors and explain I'm a little bit deaf, and there's my phone number if my music's too loud. It's just my way of getting to know them. And now every one of my neighbours is absolutely brilliant. The little kids come over, they show me their new My Little Pony toys.
Fantastic.
It's great. It's great.
That's really lovely, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's
it
so
is.
Nice.
Brilliant.
Because you're not well as a result of being on active service. You've had to retire, and I mean, what you were listing, the things that you have to cope with, and health wise. So you're deaf, is that correct?
I'm partly deaf.
Partly deaf, you were saying, yeah, and other
issues. I've got a spinal fusion with spinal cord decompression. I've got progressive neuro disease and COPD.
So they sound very challenging.
Yeah.
And the spinal one sounds very painful.
It's chronic pain that I've had for years, yeah.
And just living with that alone.
Get used to it, to be honest.
Yeah. But I suppose every day you wake up and perhaps you don't know who's out there. You don't know what their reaction's going to be to you, do you? I mean, most middle-aged women, Vicky, it's true to say, and I hate to say this because it's a cliche, but it's true. You know, we hit a certain age and we're invisible. Mm. And there was an ex-TV commentator, and she was saying what she wouldn't do for a wolf whistle now. but it just doesn't come our way because nobody sees us, which in some ways, I suppose, means we can get away with murder. But on the other hand, you think, oh, it would be nice to be noticed. But you've come at it slightly later in life. And so, you know, do you feel you obviously can't be invisible, can you? That's not an issue you're going to have to face. But sometimes, I suppose, you're coming to the attention of people you'd really rather not come to the attention of.
You do, yeah, you do. I take people as they come. Everyone gets a chance. And I tend to chat with people wherever I go. And not many people have been up close to people like me. And if you're open, you're friendly and approachable, a lot of them feel comfortable asking me even questions, even personal questions, which I have no problem with, as long as they're respectful. But, yeah, you do come up against that. And we call a birth gender woman a CIS woman.
Right.
You've been doing it your whole life. For us, it's brand new. Yeah. We're enjoying it.
Well, you were lucky. You missed out on the sexist 80s, Vicky.
I always wanted Gary Glitter's platform shoes.
So what's your favourite... I know I want to come on to more serious things because I know you've had an amazing background. You've worked for the CID. You've been a fireman, as we said. You've been in the Royal Military Police and active service in Northern Ireland. You've worked with drug rehab. You've worked with the homeless. You've worked with child prostitution. So I do want to come on to those more serious elements. But just to lighten the mood, what's your... favourite, you know, I love a frock, I love a dress. Mm-hmm. You know, you very rarely see me in trousers, and I love a pair of high heeled shoes. What's your thing?
Bling and shoes.
Bling.
Yeah. I do like the bling.
Yeah, there's a lot more bling about than there was, you know, and there's a lot more choice, I think, for women.
Yeah, a lot more choice. Like shopping for women, I have to steer clear of all the charity shops here.
Oh, they're fatal, aren't they? But it's lovely because it's kind of easy come, easy go, and you know when you're buying something from there that it's going to a good cause, so everybody wins, don't they?
Yeah, it's nice to develop your own style. Like, I try to dress with it. I like to look smart. I believe as a trans person, you have to put a little bit of extra effort in. I like to dress with a bit of class.
And what about applying makeup? I mean, I'm your age, a little bit older, but I've never mastered the art of putting on a foundation. Mm-hmm. So I never wear it. Not because I think I look better without, simply because I can't do it. I did it once. I looked like I was only about 20 and I looked like an oil painting. Hideous. And it ran and it was patchy and it kind of gave me lines where I didn't even have lines then. So forgot all that. Never gone there. Clearly too late now. But you've got beautiful makeup on. Did somebody teach you to do that, or did you just practice?
Beforehand, I used to look like Danny LaRue. No one ever taught me, but when I came back from Canada, I went to a makeup artist called Gordon Fawcett in Liverpool.
Yeah.
He's a transgender specialist, and he did a complete makeover, and he teaches you the colours and how to do it. And the one thing he taught me was less is more. And
Perhaps I could do with going to him then.
He's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
He's brilliant. He does... CIS women as well.
And what about hair? Because obviously that was a whole new, presumably in the army you had it very short, so you weren't used to having longer hair. So even those things must be a difference. But I bet you couldn't wait to grow your hair and have some fun with it.
It's quite a transition. Like when you actually decide to, when you start coming out, you do actually become more feminine or more masculine if you're a female to male, naturally. And I did look for ways. I've actually got dreadlocks, long dreadlocks, ways to make it more feminine. And so I dyed it blonde. My natural colour is grey.
Same for all of us, same for all of us.
And I dyed it blonde. I tried red and that was not good enough. And I wanted it to be pretty drastic, so I bleached blonde in it.
Yeah, because I can see you've got, like you say, your dreads in. But I can see your hair's lovely and wavy and just about shoulder length. It's really pretty,
isn't it?
Got
very curly hair, naturally.
Yeah, it's lovely, lovely. Do you ever have it without the dreads?
Not long.
Not long.
It's always been long dreads.
Yeah.
When I got these dreads the second time, I grew my hair long and then added dreaded after that.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Okay, so super talking to you, Vicky. We'll be back after the break. And like I say, we'll be touching on some of the things you've done in the past and some of the volunteer work you currently do. And more of the girly stuff too. Okay, thanks very much for listening. Be back after the break. Thank you.
This is Vectis Radio.
Putting the community back into local radio.
Hello and welcome back to Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and my special guest, Vicky Marie Hogan. She identifies as a transgender woman and she's a local volunteer. But with such an amazing background, Just to recap, you've been in the CID, a police officer, fireman, you've been in the Royal Military Police, active service in Northern Ireland, you've been undercover on a heroin unit, you've worked with the homeless and child prostitution, drugs rehab, let alone your volunteer work for the Age UK and the Samaritans here on the island. What a CV.
Yeah. I must have something for uniforms. I got told once that a long, long time ago that I'm very good at reinventing myself, and it's probably true. I've done the biggest reinvention you could possibly do right now.
But there is a link, you know, that a certain profile of person would tackle those hugely responsible jobs that you've had. How did that feel for you doing when you were, say, in Northern Ireland on active service? It must have been actually terrifying. Or undercover. So you're kind of undercover as Vicky. Let's go for the undercover. You're undercover as Vicky, really, aren't you? And undercover as in the Special Forces. That must have been, you're kind of double indemnity, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, like I said, I was in denial for a long time, so it didn't even register. I wouldn't even acknowledge my feminine side. And my attitude and outlook, I was always feminine, and my emotions, but I was a big macho, always going for a laugh, and if it was a bit dodgy, I'd go and do it.
So what's the thing, it's probably impossible to say, but what were the things you were most proud of in that career?
The difference in people's lives. If you can just do something for one person that makes them feel better about themselves for 1 minute, why not do it? And the biggest thing to come out of it all is that I'm so glad that I haven't become cynical. I'm so happy that I haven't become cynical. And a lot of what I saw and did wasn't very nice at the time, but now I'm so glad because it's given me experience from other people and my own experience that I can give to other people.
So you must have been incredibly brave to take on those roles. And you must. Sorry?
I've never considered myself brave, probably just a bit stupid.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you're a fireman, so you went into burning buildings, you've been undercover, you've worked with, I would imagine, very difficult people, you've been in dangerous situations in Northern Ireland. So that's most people's definition of bravery. So you've been brave in your career, and obviously, I would imagine you need to be very brave to do what you did. I know you're telling me you had no choice, but equally, you've really had to put yourself on the line, haven't you, Vicky?
Yeah, it's just part of personality. There's many people like it. Many servicemen, police officers, firemen, that it's just part of their inbuilt personality that they don't even think twice. As a fireman, we should say, when other people are running away, we run towards it.
Yeah.
And it's always the same. It's part of a certain type of person and goes into those sort of professions. And you're not aware of it, you don't particularly feel brave, it's just what you do. It's just part of your own makeup.
Yeah. And what do you think you've needed the greater courage for, to step into a burning building or face somebody perhaps with a firearm in your career, or to come out as a transgender woman? What was the hardest?
To stand your ground when the situation is dangerous. Your first instinct is to turn around and run. I felt like running many times, but to actually not do it. I think as well, walking past especially suspected bombs in Northern Ireland, I know I used to close my eyes, grit my teeth and walk past it, and nobody didn't go bang. It's just certain situations, lots of situations in all my careers, where your first instinct is to run, but you don't for some reason. You just stand, and that takes a lot of determination, and you just grit your teeth and don't run. That's what you have to do.
And of course that must, I don't know, how do you feel now with the terrorism that we face, and the difference, I suppose, was when we had the bombs in Northern Ireland. I mean, I remember working in Oxford Street at the time, and they removed all the litter bins eventually so that they couldn't be left there, but we were given warnings, weren't we? They left a bomb in a certain place, they went, and we were given often totally inadequate warning, but we were given some sort of warning. Now it's very different, isn't it, because obviously the terrorists are prepared to die for their cause. Does this, when you hear these reports on the news, does this bring back with sharp focus what you lived through yourself?
No, not really. It's people need to remember that not every Irishman is a terrorist, not every person from the Middle East is a terrorist. I've met many people from both communities all over the world, and the majority of the nicest, most accommodating, friendly people we could meet is the minority, and they in general do not have the support of the majority to do what they do, and they do it for effect. You say about the warnings, they do it not to actually kill or injure the people, that's just the means to an end. They want the publicity.
Yeah.
That's what they're looking for.
So I know now you volunteer, and you volunteer for the Samaritans here and Age UK. What's your purpose in that? Why do you feel the need to do that?
Because of my background, I feel so honoured and blessed that I've got something to give away. I always say that I haven't done and seen everything, but I've seen people that have. And even just to talk to someone, I was on the seafront of Ryde the other day, and there's a homeless lad. I started chatting with him, and I shared a bag of chips with him, and made him feel like a human and worth something, just for 5 minutes. And it's so simple to do. Why doesn't everybody do it?
So you've said something really poignant there, that you hoped that you'd made him feel like a human, and I'm sure you did, by just making a very simple gesture of talking to him and sharing your food with him. Do you feel that enough people have done that to you? Do you feel they've made you feel like a human and less like a freak? And they're your words, Vicky. So do you feel that you've been given that kind of love?
By a lot of people, no, but especially here. A lot of the people that I've met here have been absolutely wonderful people. The island's been so accepting. I did get some abuse in London when I came back from Canada. I got 4 years of it in Canada. But here, everyone, the majority, have been absolutely brilliant. I'm actually included in a group of women 50 plus with style, which is the biggest honour to be accepted by the women as a woman in that sort of group. I was the only trans person there. There has been one or two negative incidents. I'm in court on the 14th. With someone that's charged with hate crime and threats. But that's going to be dealt with soon and finished. I'll be glad just to walk away and leave it behind me now.
Who supports you? Because I don't know, but trying to put myself in your shoes, when you close the door at night, and perhaps you've experienced some negativity and hate, let's call it what it is, and misunderstanding and abuse, and you close your door at night, who cares for you? Who looks after you? Who do you turn to?
Absolutely no one, to be honest. I've got a little Yorkie. She's my sidekick.
And what's her name?
Millie. That's Millie.
And how old's Millie?
She's 9.
Little oh, Yorkie. So you've had...
Convinced she's the right one.
Aren't they all? Small dog syndrome. So, have you had Millie from a puppy?
Sorry?
Have you had her from
a
puppy?
No, I got when I came to the island.
So, is she a little rescue?
No, I put an advert on White Bay, I think it was, mm-hmm. looking for a cat or a dog, a small dog. And she was with a family and she didn't like the kids too much. So, she came to me and we've been together forever.
Oh, that's so lovely, isn't it? And I think there's nothing like, particularly a dog, to help you make friends when you go out walking.
Oh,
and
she's great for that, yeah.
And you've instantly got something in common, haven't you?
Yeah.
And
she attracts a lot of people. I took her to Age UK with me. And she's an instant icebreaker. She's really good at that. Everywhere I go, everyone, they seem to remember me for some reason, but they also remember Millie.
Lovely. And so will there be baby Millies or just one Millie?
No, just one. She's 9 years old. She's too old.
She's too old. Yeah, lovely. But I think this island particularly, I mean, I've got a cat, but I call it the Isle of Dogs because it's a very dog-loving place, isn't it?
Yes,
and
it is.
And dog-friendly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
she loves the beach.
Does she swim?
I took her to the shoreline at Ryde the other day, and she looked at me with disgust, and like, you think I'm getting in there?
Was it a warm day though?
It was, yeah. She won't even go outside. If it's been raining, the floors wet, she won't go out.
Oh, love her. Mm. And is she one of those that has the little top knot?
I tried putting a little bow on her. She loves to get dressed and she loves bling. She wears a pearl necklace.
Of course she does, yeah.
And she's wearing, lovely. She wears jackets and coats and jumpers and actually gets a bit upset if I take them off her.
So has she got a Diamante collar as well?
It's a double string pearls with a diamante bone.
Oh, I like that.
She loves
that.
It.
Yes, and does she have a different one, you know, maybe birthday, Christmases?
No, she's only got the one necklace, but she's got different coats and clothes, and she loves being bathed and pampered. She's a real princess.
Oh, perfect. Oh, gosh, I'd love to meet her, she said. And do you ever take her back to the family, and you know, for a quick hello?
I used to, but not anymore.
Yeah. And I think animals are very, I mean, they're totally accepting of us, of just who we are, aren't we? If we give them love, they give us love. And some of them are so lovely and loyal, they give love to people who don't particularly like them at all. But that's the beauty of an animal, isn't it? They're always loyal and they're always loving, yeah. And they don't judge you.
Yeah.
And they don't answer back, do they?
Well, she tries. She looks at me. If she sees me put my shoes on, she'll actually leg it outside and stand next to the car and won't move because she thinks I'm going to leave her behind.
Oh, but you didn't bring her today.
Well, I'm going from here to the festival for the Pride.
Oh, okie dokie.
It's a bit big. I normally take her everywhere with me.
Right.
And she trots around, and everyone sort of seems to say hello to her. But I left her at home today, and she wasn't too happy about that.
No, I bet she'd have liked the festival.
Yeah, well, she'd have loved it. Yeah.
Yeah, all that attention.
Yeah.
You'd have probably seen her up on one of the stages, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Working the crowd.
Yeah, she probably would. Yeah.
Oh, that's lovely. I'm really interested in the work you do for the Samaritans, because obviously that's on the end of a telephone, and you're there fielding all manner of crisis calls, aren't you? You're getting people, and they really are at their lowest ebb.
Yeah.
And I know I've had the head of the Isle of Wight Samaritans in here, and John Trotman, and he explained about the intensive training, obviously, that everybody has to undergo, and that you're always supported, aren't you? There's always somebody there for you to offload to once you've taken a call. What do you, when you leave there, what do you take from that?
Well, I'm actually just completing the training.
Okay.
My aim is to actually go into the prisons eventually. I'd like to go into the prisons. They do peer training and also one-to-one. I'd like to do one-to-one, face-to-face help. The Samaritan's ethos is mainly just to listen. And a lot of people have got no one to listen to them. No one actually bothers to listen. The minute you say something, they don't want to know. And you won't, you're non-judgmental. And the support is there for the workers, for the volunteers.
Yes.
You have a mentor, you have a leader on duty. And there's always a debrief after the shift. And they do take care of you. It's a natural community, all the volunteers.
And this is a very personal question, and you feel free not to answer it. Have you ever felt like calling the Samaritans yourself, or called them?
Most definitely. Yeah.
So is that part of the reason, because of the support you got from them, the reason you've decided to step in and help?
In part, yeah. I know when I came to the island, because I'm not able to work anymore, I knew with this illness I can't focus on TV and that anymore, so I knew I wanted to do something, and I was keen to, basically, when I left Canada, I walked away from everything, and I was keen to rebuild a life of some sort when I came here. And I know I wanted to give away what I'd learnt over the years, and all the different avenues have sort of just come about. I did start off in doing a lot of transgender support work. I was president of the UK chapter, Transgender Veterans International. I don't do any of that anymore, but it sort of all led on from there. Just built a life, basically.
And what do you think's been the most rewarding? Because you have worked with some really troubled people in intoxication units, child prostitution, like I say, all manner of problems with the Samaritans and Age UK. Where is your heart in all that?
Just people, no particular age group. It's just people, to see people smile and laugh. I've got a bit of a sense of humour. Just to make someone laugh, make them feel better for even just a minute.
And do you feel that helps you takes the place perhaps of your family? Because you're nurturing those people, aren't you? You're giving them a lot of love and care. And like you say, you're listening to them when perhaps other people don't want to or can't. And that's something very much of a parental role, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Also, I mean, from the age of 6, I was in care. And I know what it's like to be alone and abandoned, hurt, feel unloved, unwanted. And it's just... and to be lonely, and it's nice that I can help someone not feel that way.
So did you go through the care system until you were 18? And
yeah, I was put in an orphanage when I was 6. My parents divorced, and they decided they didn't want me, and I ended up in an orphanage in Mill Hill run by nuns.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. That can't have been easy.
No, it wasn't. I'm grateful for it now. I've got the experience. At the time, it wasn't very good.
So what did that experience teach you?
To be honest, self-reliance.
Because you come across, I don't know, it's very vulnerable on the one hand, but incredibly strong on the other.
I'm vulnerable as my female side, and I'm a fairly confident person. But, you know, I have my weak moments. I get over them pretty quick, but, yeah, and I actually do follow the Buddhist way, so it's helped a lot. I live to Buddhist principles. I'm actually trying to reconnect with all that now by going on a retreat next month. But I've been many years, I've been trying to live the Buddhist way of just compassion and peace and harmony. And I'm getting back to that now.
Oh, that's brilliant. What's your piece of, you know, because we all get older, and I always think, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could do the thing I suppose we're supposed to do and pass on what we've learned and the little words of wisdom to the next generation? Because it doesn't work like that, does it? The next generation always have to learn for themselves, and when they start out, you know, we've all done it, we think we know it all, and that's just life. And then people get very old and elderly, and perhaps, you know, not very well, and they can't pass on. You think, oh, if only you could give me the benefit, you know, of your time on the earth and your wisdom. What would be your legacy? The pearls of wisdom you want to pass on?
Well, the thing that I want to leave behind when I finally go is I left this world a little better than how I found it.
And what would you say to people, you know, young people, just 20-year-old, just starting out? What would you say to them?
If there's something you want to do, do it. The hardest part of doing anything is actually starting. Once you start, stick to it. Have a focus, stick to the goal, and do it to the best of your ability. Even if you fail, at least you know you tried. You only know you're trying if you fail. So just go for it. Don't people tell you no, because you can. All you have to do is do it.
I think fear of failure and fear in general is a big blocker, isn't it? I think it puts people off doing things, so they take perhaps the middle road, the easy road. But I don't know, I think that's the path of discontent, really, isn't it?
You know, part of failing and making mistakes is part of life's lessons. You learn from it. The trick about that is applying the lessons. That's the hard part. Learning the lessons easy, but actually doing the lessons different. But don't be scared of failing. I've made tons of mistakes. They say learning from your mistakes makes you smart. I should be a genius by now.
Well, perhaps you are, Vicky.
I don't know about that.
You come across as very wise.
Sometimes, jokingly, I tell people I think I'm Marjorie Proops and Buddha's love child.
Marjorie Proops, for the younger listeners, yeah. Used to do an advice column in the Daily Mirror. So is that something like Agony Aunt? Do you see yourself in that role?
Not really, no.
No.
People do, I mean.
Do you have friends of all ages?
Yeah.
Yeah, because sometimes we get to this older, people younger don't really want to identify, so they want to, you know, and you. Yeah,
I've actually got a couple of, I'm surrogate mum to a couple of online trans kids that haven't got parents, and they pop in and out during the day and just tell me their pet snail died, or, you know, this, that and the other, just like, they haven't had a mum. They call me mama, and they ask to call me mum, and I just talk to them online and as a mum, as something, try and fulfil a role, something they've never had, something I never had.
That's really lovely, isn't it?
It's really nice, really touching
that you can do that. And I suppose now that you have retired, you're free to be Vicky, mm-hmm. and to do the things that Vicky, like you said, that kind of more caring side, fulfil all that side of you, which must be very gratifying as well.
Oh, it is, it's great. I can be the true me.
And in terms of being the true you, and in terms of going forward with a relationship, what sort of relationship, you know, loving relationship for you, for Vicky, would you want as perhaps a life partner now?
Someone that you can just be with. Someone that I think many of us have settled to make do or make best, but I want everything now. I want to be able to just find someone to give love to and to love me for who I am. The whole view of relationships when you're trans, and also with the hormone therapy, actually changes. I've always identified as being attracted to women. I always used to say that I was a straight man, but now I'm a gay woman. But now I know that I was a gay woman my whole life. I've never actually had a relationship as a woman, and to be honest, I don't know how the mechanics work. It's a completely different ball game. Not just the sexual side of life, but the relationship wise. What you want from a woman, how you interact with a woman, the type of woman completely changes.
Okay, I find this so interesting because you were married twice, mm-hmm. so you've had relationships with women, and now you're talking about having, you know, looking forward to another relationship with a woman, but as Vicky.
Yeah.
So you see relating to that woman in a totally different way.
Yeah, it's totally different. The best way I can put it is, as a man, you're the holder. You're the dominant side of it. I'm not submissive in that way, but to be held by a woman is another woman. It would be totally different. Totally different. And the interaction is just, you can be a lot more gentle, a lot more feminine. Women have a different way of communicating. I mean, I'm even thinking differently now. I can understand women a lot more. I don't think anyone will understand women completely, but and to be honest, the relationship side, I wouldn't know if I was being chatted up by a woman. I wouldn't know how to. I'm terrified of coming across as a man chatting up a woman. The actual mechanics of it, I haven't got a clue.
Maybe the mechanics of it don't really matter.
It's the
emotion, isn't it, and the love, and I'm sure the rest would follow, wouldn't it?
That would be nice because it's intimacy, but that's not important. Mm. If it didn't happen, that's not. I'm interested in the relationship side of life. Someone to share your life with, to be happy with, and live out whatever time's left.
And of course, you know, for everyone now, dating and finding a partner is so, you know, there's so many different ways to approach it now, aren't there? I mean, when we were younger, you probably, I don't know, just went to the pub, or we went to a disco or something, or been to school with them, or lived next door to them. But now, you know, the whole world are open, isn't it? And there's online dating and goodness knows, and various apps and all sorts of things you can engage in should you want to. It seems a bit of a minefield to me. How do you feel about all that side of it?
I did actually try online dating, first time ever. I lasted 4 days.
Girl after my own heart, yeah.
And I don't know, I've always been pretty shy that way. Even
was
in
it just too
life.
In your face? Is that how it works?
Just yeah, too. I'm just hoping to meet someone and it happens naturally.
Yes, that would seem the old romantic way.
I've
wouldn't
tried
it?
Forcing it and
doesn't work.
Doesn't work out too good.
No. I think I'd be exactly the same. Plus, I'm rubbish with technology. So that it just wouldn't be for me. Wouldn't be for me at all.
Yeah. I've never been on dating sites and that sort of thing before, and not my thing. But I thought I'd try it, and now I lasted 4 days.
It seems to
and
me to be
my money back.
Almost like internet shopping, then, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, you're just a commodity, aren't you? And then there's too much choice. Whereas perhaps if you're just ambling along Ryde Beach with Millie, and you just happen to, you know, eyes lock with a stranger, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I'll know, and the other person will know the minute we see each other. Like the way you look at each other, you can always tell. Well, you can't always tell, but I know. I mean, you know, I imagine what it's going to be like and what I want, and I'm not really prepared to settle for make do or second best now.
And would you actually want to live with someone, or would that just be too much, do you think?
I would like to. The right person, because the right person would just fit. At the moment, I've been doing things my way and having things how I want them for too long.
That's what I'm thinking. It's very different, isn't it? And I know a lot of women our age, perhaps they've been married, they've had children, they've done all that, and they've been there every night and they've cooked a meal. You know, they've played that very traditional role, and then the marriage has broken up, and they've been very definite that they do not, you know, they're happy to date, they're happy to have a relationship, but they don't want to live with that person. And they don't want to do that mothering role anymore, or care that looking after them. They just want to have the fun side of it.
Well, no, for the right person, you adjust. I don't know anyone at the moment that right person. If that right person come along, then I don't see that being an issue. If we did live together, it'd be because that was felt right and happened naturally.
Yeah. And if you could describe your dream woman, who would that be?
there is someone on the island, but I'm not going to say who.
Okie dokie. Okie dokie.
No, intelligent, a feminine woman, fun, open, good sense of humour, definitely, and just out to have a good time and has a gentle heart and a gentle spirit.
There's somebody very much like yourself then.
Maybe, hopefully. Better looking.
And do see, now you've been just like a woman, putting yourself down. Don't. So is there, you know, I mean, gosh, when I was younger, David Essex was my crush. And I'm going back a bit, I know. And even Rod Stewart, and Rod's here on the island this Sunday, headlining, we all know. It was even on the Archers. You know, they even got it on the Archers about the Isle of Wight Festival and Rod headlining. So I think that was a very good PR job there. But who... Have you got a girly crush?
Doris Day.
Doris
Day. I always liked Doris Day. I always thought she was cute.
Yeah.
And, no, just very, very nice.
Yeah, because she's... I suppose she was more girl next door than Marilyn Monroe, wasn't she?
Yeah,
if you go for the blonde bombshell type. She didn't have that... She's very pretty, but didn't have the essential, the bling, the glamour, did she, in that sense?
Didn't look too high maintenance.
No. And I don't think she was in real life, was she? But she liked dogs, didn't she, I think?
I can't remember.
Yes, yes. And obviously, whoever you pick to be a partner in future will have to love dogs.
Yeah.
We just hope they haven't got a Rottweiler.
Yeah.
You don't want...
And to be honest, like, I used to be, in my past life, you know, it was the arm candy... now it's
When you were a man, you were looking for women that were very beautiful to have in your arms.
My wives were good looking, or my girlfriends were good looking. That's what I went for. But now that isn't absolutely essential. That's nice, but there's a saying that I saw the other day that says I fall in love with souls, not faces. That's so true.
I think we learn that as we get older, don't we? It's not all like, because often the people who look beautiful are actually can be quite rotten inside. Speaking of my own personal experience, nobody else's, and vice versa. But there's always got to be that chemistry, hasn't there? And you can look at someone and you think, well, they're not classically good looking, but I really like them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's weird, isn't it? You cannot put your finger on that.
Yeah.
And you must feel that now as well.
The soul recognises the soul.
Yeah. But I was actually thinking, I was being less ethereal there. I was thinking more of actually fancying someone, Dickie.
Oh, yeah.
You can fancy some very odd types.
Yeah, oh, yeah. People say, I hear people all the time, I like this sort of type. There's no particular type for me.
No.
It's the person.
Yeah.
The whole person. You know, of course I like the act side to look nice. You know, who doesn't like a nicely wrapped Christmas present?
Of course.
That isn't absolutely essential, but it would be nice.
Well, I'm sure if you just carry on being your lovely self, I can't imagine. I just hope that happens for you sooner rather than later, Vicky. And it's been, I don't know, it's been amazing talking to you today. It's a real joy. And you've opened my heart and you've opened my mind to things and, told me lots of things I didn't know. So thank you for being so open and honest and opening your heart to us today. I really appreciate
it. If anyone sees me around, come and say hi. I've got blonde dreadlocks, in case you can't recognise me.
Is it green eyes, brown eyes?
Blue eyes.
Blue eyes, okie dokie.
Yeah.
Sunglasses on your head, maybe.
Sunglasses on your head.
Lots of bling.
A little Yorkie wearing a pink jacket.
Lovely. Yeah, so super. Thank you so much.
You
really
much,
appreciate
though.
Your time.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening. It's been a pleasure, as always. Please join me in a couple of weeks when I'll be talking to the lovely Norma Bradley. She's a member of the Bryston WI, bakes a mean sponge cake, so obviously a friend of mine. She's a volunteer and she with the local library and a very keen prize-winning photographer. So be lovely to have you listen into that and be with us. So thank you so much. Enjoy the festival if you're going. Have a smashing weekend. Speak soon. Lots of love. Bye-bye. www.vectisradio.com